Welcome, Photon Warriors. Commence strategic maneuvers at audible command signal. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, begin.
Jackalope Radio presents Movies Hate You. Movies Hate You, with your host, Rob Housechild.
My name's Rob. This is the Movies Hate You show. We are sponsored by bmovie.com. This is a show about movies and hate and you. Do you like that, Todd?
That was fantastic.
I want to get my opening. Shouldn't a radio host have the same opening every time?
It was fantastical.
Shouldn't you have a... Well, with us tonight is, as always...
Except for last week. He was on sabbatical in Beijing.
Yeah, man. Mr. Ri is back, finally, after a long one-episode hiatus to give us some movie DVD reviews that were given to us by the fine folks at bmovie.com, our sponsor. Not that any of you go there and shop. I see the numbers every month. I know you guys go there, and then you go find it cheaper on Amazon. That's how you support the independent vendor. That's why there are no video stores left, those mom and pops. That's why they're selling ice cream now at the mall, you jerks. I'd go buy a movie, $6 movie or something, just something, so that they don't knock us off the air. And then I have to get like a pizzeria to sponsor the show, and then Todd gets mad at me.
I actually like pizzerias. It's okay.
Todd Sheets is with us as always. That's as always. You are as always, Todd. You are our producer.
Yep.
And what exactly do you produce for this show?
I produce lots of stuff. I produce all the audio and make sure you sound good and edit your mistakes.
No, I really think that people, you know, because there's always producers hanging around radio shows. I think people want to know, what the hell does a producer do? Aren't I the producer as the host?
No, you're the host. I'm the producer. I twiddle the knobs and make sure that you're on the air.
So there's just a bunch of people standing around handing me stuff to say.
That's what they're doing.
Well, welcome back, Mr. Ri.
Hey, hello there.
Well, look how excited he is. How are things? I heard you bailed on last week's show to go see a Knick game to see your boy Jeremy Lin fire up the court. Is that true?
Yeah, well, you know, and I feel gypped by the whole experience. Are you following? Thank you. Are you following the whole chink in the armor thing with the
oh, the God, how stupid. I mean, that's, you know... What a triple standard we have in this culture, isn't it? I mean, you know, I hate to go off the topic of movies, not like we ever do, but listen, the whole movies thing is a front. As Todd will tell you, last week, we didn't talk about any movies. We talked about Batman Returns and Phantom Menace. These things aren't... These are, like, just events. I don't know what they are. They're not movies, though. Anyway, did you know that, Mr. Ri? Did you listen to last week's show?
I was not able to. I was.
Do you even have a computer? My thing is this: you weren't here, so I had to talk. I had to get a review of Phantom Menace in 3D from Todd. That's how desperate this show became. Do you know what it's like to sit through anything related to the Phantom Menace? Do you know what? Seriously, I'd rather watch an industrial washer with clothes in it for 2 hours. I mean, seriously, have you ever had to be forced to engage with someone? Forced. I have to do this. I can't go, you know, I can't change the channel. I can't walk away from the mic. I had to talk to this guy about the Phantom Menace. That's like me bringing up that thing that happened to you when you were a kid.
Well, remember? Me when I was a kid?
Yeah. With Kermit the Frog thing? The thing with your uncle? Anyway, forget it. But you know what I'm saying.
I know exactly what you're saying, and it's taken years of therapy to get to this point.
Exactly. So,
but, you know, not to take sides, not to take sides at all, but
don't.
I do know how that feels, because I just watched about 3 hours of Canadian TV coverage of The Phantom Menace before it came out.
Why would you do that?
Don't ask why. Oh, it's too late. You asked why. I don't know. It's just one of those things that kind of interests me.
In 2012, you watched I'm assuming some kind of bootleg torrent download or something, that was 3 hours of news coverage about The Phantom Menace. Is that correct?
Well, that's partially correct. Apparently, just some fan from Canada, some obsessive fan, much like myself.
Yeah.
And probably the two of you, decided to take everything he could get his hands on during the hoopla surrounding the premiere of Phantom Menace. So he collected all of this stuff. And, you know, I only watched one of the guy. He put three discs up on a site to freely download. It's all good. It's not for sale or anything. I watched one disc.
Yeah, note to Mr. Lucas. It's not for sale or anything.
The guy's not bootlegging it or anything, and this is just stuff he taped off the TV that's completely lost. And for people like us, you know, it aired in Canada, so we never saw it in the first place. So to me, it was more interesting to see like another viewpoint or another.
What's another viewpoint? Like, they didn't get the same press release. They weren't on the same bandwagon. What was the other view of The Phantom Menace?
Point taken, it wasn't really another view, but it was different people talking about it, I guess.
People with different accents speaking about it. Was any of it in French?
No, this is the real Canada. This is the real American Canada.
The real Canada.
North America, hello.
Michael Moore Canada, yes. Great.
It's not Canada, yes. Canada's like 10 cents higher, slightly higher in Canada, that Canada.
I can't believe that you would. I mean, okay, so you're a Phantom Menace fan, or you're just...
Oh, well, here's the thing. I didn't hear your conversation, so I don't know whose side I'm on.
Maybe that's the rule. If you miss the show, if you're not on the show, you don't get to listen to it.
That's the rule here.
And if I miss the show, I'm not going to listen to it.
And as well, you shouldn't.
Right.
I'm more of a fan of Ephemera than I am of The Phantom Menace per se. I mean, I was definitely interested in all the hoopla. I even was in Los Angeles, and I got to see the line of people who were waiting for a month before the film opened or whatever. But I did get to see the line, which was kind of cool. But now I'm into.
But you weren't in the line. You weren't in the line. You didn't go see.
No, I didn't actually get that close. I drove by the line. I was out there on business.
You couldn't go see it.
I could have. Oh. But you know what? I'd rather watch it through a window, basically.
Well, watch it through a window, the same way you like to meet your women.
Exactly. I do roll the window down a bit, just, you know, so I can put the 20 out.
What I don't understand, if you're such a fan of all this, why weren't you there? I'm sure Todd was there opening night in, what was that, 1999 or whatever? What year was that, 2000?
I was there on both opening nights, thank you, the original and the 3D.
Ah.
God. Well, I mean, how do you run a show when this guy's at such a disadvantage? How can I go on with this? Doesn't this? He was in line for Phantom Menace 3D. Anyway, I guess I'm taking this too far. I'm taking it too personally.
Well,
I even had my Jedi outfit on, man. I had the whole thing. I had the saber going.
This show is produced by a guy who wears a Jedi outfit and a Batman costume.
Damn right.
Does everyone out there know this? Listeners?
I'm proud.
You hardened fanboys who like talking about Cannibal Holocaust over a couple of cold milks? Yeah. The producer wears a Jedi outfit. I don't wear a Jedi outfit. Please, let's get that straight.
You should. It would be better for you.
Get out of here. What would be better for me? It would be better for my love life, right?
It could.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
I think you should wear like a Burt Reynolds circa Smokey the Bandit outfit. You know, like a red cowboy shirt.
Now you're talking my language, brother.
See, that would be nice. That would be cool.
This guy knows how to cut right to my ego.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Or okay. Tallyfield at the same time.
Or that. See, now you got to ruin it.
That's a harder look.
So how about like half, like those half face people in the sideshow? Like one half is Burt Reynolds of your face and your outfit, and then the other half is Sally Field. Now that would be cool. And then, like, if I turn to the right, you're like, oh man, Burt Reynolds, how cool is that? And you turn to the left, and I was like, oh, how cool, Sally Field too. And then you could drive the Trans Am on the American side, but then you could have a second Trans Am that has the British steering so that you could drive as both characters.
Now, Rob, this isn't the first time you've thought of this, is it?
No, I'm just very... I'm good on my feet, man. I'm really good. I mean, spontaneous, you know? Just, boom, comes out, man. You've inspired me, bro.
I think you have a manifesto.
You've inspired me, man. No, why can't I just be inspired by something you said?
All right. No, you're right.
Well, anyway, I've given Phantom Menace enough time on this show to begin with, so enough more Phantom Menace. I don't care about you, stupid... You're a fool for sitting through the press junkets or whatever it was. I mean, that's like getting a time machine and then going back in time to, like, sit in on... To go see, like... I don't even know. There's nothing as bad as that. Like,
get out of here.
Knowing what it is. I mean, it's one thing to watch all that stuff before the Phantom Menace hit here. Let's say it was big in Canada and we didn't get to see all that. And it was just hitting here. And you're like, I got to see all this press stuff. This guy put this tape together. But no, you like 10 years later, you're like, oh yeah, I'm totally going to watch this, man.
We believe in magic, fool.
So we believe in magic. Movie magic or real magic?
Movie magic.
Well, you know, seeing Phantom Menace in 3D is as close as a lot of people are ever going to come to having somebody actually touching them. Isn't that true? I mean...
You what are you saying? The fans are unlayable?
Not all of them. I'm saying some. Some people, it's the closest they're ever going to come to having Natalie Portman touch them.
I want to.
For most people, that's true.
Todd, I remember we had Ken Lucas on the show from Unwinnable website, and if that thing goes through, we were talking about, can they call the show Unjackable? Wouldn't that be funny?
That sounds bizarre.
Why?
It just does, but yes, I remember all the whole thing. Yes.
You know, jackalope, unjackable.
It's funny.
I think it's funny. Mr. Ree thinks it's funny. He's laughing. Listen to him. Listen.
I'm laughing at Todd's deadpan. It's funny.
Todd is funny, or the Unjackable is funny?
Todd's response just now is it's funny.
He's like, funny. It was the Bob Newhart answer, right? That was what was funny about it? We had that discussion.
It's funny.
It's funny. It's fun.
That would be the Bob Newhart, too.
Stretch it out. Yes. Now listen, last week I touched on a conspiracy and Todd thought I was crazy, even though he trades in these conspiracies and alien hunting and ghost abductions and all this stuff.
Oh, bullcrap. Sorry, I had to cough.
You think that stuff is bullcrap? All that Night Watch?
I just think sometimes what you're getting ready to say is.
Okay, so listen, hear me out, Mr. Ree. All right, not to rehash last week's episode, but Todd really shot me down. Now, but then I found some evidence this week. I shared with Todd offline, and he couldn't even respond. But he responded with a laugh. That's because he's nervous. Now this Jeremy Lin guy, I know you're a sports fan, Mr. Ree, especially with Jeremy Lin because you're from the same province in China. And I know you're following his career and, you know, all the blah, blah, blah. So I said, this guy comes out of nowhere and he's destroying American players who we've worshipped for years. We've put on pedestals.
Just because he's better.
This guy is a government plant. And I said, not to turn this into a conspiracy show, which I wouldn't mind, but I want to keep it with a movie conspiracy thing, but it does tie in. It actually is a movie conspiracy in a way, if you hear me out. So I maintained that Jeremy Lin, coming out of nowhere with this fake backstory, he's living on a couch, and then he's upsetting LeBron James. I thought that was a little bit too perfect when it happened out of nowhere. And Todd tried to say, well, I had seen Chinese guys play basketball 10 years ago. And then I had realized live on the air that Todd had drank the Kool-Aid already on that whole thing. And was sold by the government. Anybody who would go pay to see the Phantom Menace twice is a sucker, born sucker, you know? So they're just, you know, he's bought into it, man. He's one of them. So let's just forget about him right now. But do you see that? How China, the Chinese government, and the American government could work together to elevate a Chinese American, and who socially and culturally the Chinese don't necessarily have this reverence from Americans. It's kind of maybe an indifference, and it's still okay to make jokes, which is proven by Jeremy Lin's career. It's still okay on national television to say chinks in the armor or whatever. I mean, as absurd as that sounds, if that was Jewish or black or gay player and they made some comment like that live on the air, I think they'd shut the station down or burn it down. But anyway, my whole point is that this is some kind of precursor to bowing to China, to us bowing to China, forgiving them for their incredibly poor record of human rights and freedom issues, and kind of setting the stage for the next economic wave of the world. Now, Mr. Ree, what do you think of that?
Well, food for thought, maybe. Maybe they're food just getting us ready for the takeover. You know?
That's the Alex Jones extreme, scenario. Okay, yes, there are. We're getting primed for the takeover. Now, across the Movies Hate You desk comes a story on the 16th after the show that Hollywood is now going out of their way to accommodate the Chinese film market and the huge amount of money to be made in China with films, and overlooking their human rights record, but also bowing to their restrictions, and also helping shape American perception of China in film. Meryl Streep and Joel Cohen were just in Beijing recently, and the Chinese are doing a remake of Blood Simple. Which is crazy enough. That's like sidebar. There's a Chinese remake of Blood Simple happening, and Joel Cohen was there to kind of give his blessing. Raise the Red Lantern, who, Zhang Yimou, is that how you say it? How do you say his name? I could care less. Yeah. Anyway, so there's this huge movie industry that's growing over there. I want to see how they're going to deal with the bootlegging. But anyway, so Hollywood's kind of getting into bed with them early and saying, like, we're going to make movies with you, we're going to remake our movies with you, and they're going to help China look better in an American light. Do you see where that's going? You know, and in a communist country like China, let's not fool ourselves, everybody loves the Chinese. This is a terrible communist country. Forget about movies. We all love Hong Kong movies and Chinese movies and art. So blah 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 blah. I'm talking about, let's talk politically. They the government controls the media there. So now we're taking part in that, controlling the media and how Americans perceive the Chinese. And I thought that was interesting. I had just got off this conversation with Todd saying, like, wouldn't it be funny if this was really some kind of, you know, conspiracy sounds, you know, a little bit, it makes us all sound like kooks when we use that word, but maybe just a little social engineering. You know, I don't think it's going to end the world. It might change the world, but it's not going to end the world tomorrow because this is happening. But I thought it was interesting that China's flying out these Hollywood big shots to kind of help create how we perceive China. They know that's the best way to do it is through the media. I think this might be a little too heavy a topic for this show.
Well, I would say that what you just described is not even really necessarily a conspiracy theory. I think if Americans or if people in general knew, if they had any inkling of how strings were actually being pulled, and I'm not talking about like politics necessarily, but in show business, about how information gets to us and how it's filtered and how it's planted, that all completely makes sense. I mean, there's definitely an agenda, whether it's specifically a political one, but there's an agenda to make this guy a big star.
When they're ready to put somebody out, you will have to like that person. There's nothing you can do to escape that person. And they did. You know, I know the guy's dead, but you know, whatever. When they rolled out Heath Ledger back in the beginning, you couldn't get away from this guy, man. And I was like, I just stopped selling me Heath Ledger. I'm tired of it. I don't want to see it. You know, I don't want to see the stupid Night movie with the Queen soundtrack. I don't want to see it. Like, stop selling me this guy. It was just so blatant. And they just do it over and over and over again. They let nothing happen organically.
No. I mean, I've always just assumed that news was created was a reaction to something that actually happened. That, oh, something happens, and then...
Right.
A, something happens, and B, somebody describes it in print or on television or whatever, but it's actually the opposite. I mean, there certainly are things like human interest stories, like Brooklyn Brownstone burning to the ground, and you know, stuff like that is not planned. But anything that's entertainment related is all just orchestrated.
Orchestrated, and you see, yeah,
and studios, and I mean, here in New York, we've got the Daily News, we've got the Post. And almost every day, there's a picture of Beyonce on the cover of the Daily News. And I was like, well, is she really newsworthy all the time, or is it because she's owned by the same company that owns the newspaper?
Yeah.
People don't make that connection, though. People don't think, oh, another picture of Beyonce. They just see the picture of Beyonce and they say, oh, she's a newsmaker. She's in the news a lot.
And she's hot. And
she's a no-talent piece of dog crap.
And everybody, come on now.
Whether she's talented or not, it has nothing to do with the fact that they're forcing her.
Right. That's not the point. The point, yeah, it's all garbage, Todd. It's all crap. It really is. And very, very little of what we are forced to ingest is healthy for us on an intellectual level. And I think that's clear. If you at all opened your mind, even for 5 minutes, you'll know that. You'll know you're being sold a bill of goods every day. And you know what kills me is when you go to these news sites or even Yahoo, or the worst is Yahoo. I mean, you go to, it's like, you know, the top news story is like, what did Jennifer Aniston do to her abs? And then they want you to click it, but then it turns out she's got a movie coming out in like 2 weeks, you know? But then they got a story about her abs, but then like down at the bottom in like the little... You know, the little story that doesn't even have a picture. It's just like a hot link. It says like, you know, 437 killed in latest bombings and blah, blah, blah. And I've got Jennifer Aniston. It's like, wow, this is great, man. I don't have to think about the world. I only think about Jennifer Aniston's abs. Beautiful. Thank you. You know, it's crap. It's like, you know, how much crap can they, I mean, they inundate us with so much, and they, I'm saying the media, inundate us with so much garbage and useless information. We're forced to get caught up in it. We wind up talking about, hey, did you hear about the, you know, did you hear about what Beyonce did to the hotel, you know, to the hospital room with this and that? Oh, geez. You know, I hear it at work. I'm sure you guys hear it at work. Everybody's talking about everything but what matters.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, this is why movies hate you, because they are a tool of destruction. If you want to know what this show's about, this is the kind of stuff it's about. We might have a laugh, but behind the laugh is a tear. Mr. Ree is crying right now.
And laughing at the same time, yeah.
Yeah, it's a joke. You have to laugh at it. How can you take it seriously? It's a joke, yeah. Like, you know, Seth Rogen, I'm going to take him. Like, I'm tired of being sold that guy, too. You know, it's like you just keep selling me talentless people, you know, who've got like one good movie in them. And then I got to watch 15 other movies with them that are garbage. It's like they hit the one movie, they do it right once, and then I'm sold them forever. We're going to see that guy when we're 75 years old doing stuff, showing up on talk shows.
Well, they'll probably get tired of him. I mean,
tired of him. They're very downplayed him in stuff that he's showing up in. He's already becoming a, you know, after that Green Hornet bombed. Nobody wants to touch that guy. Yeah, he's like a secondary character now. Now maybe he'll go back and make a couple independent films that are good and funny, you know. And it won't be the Green Hornet. It won't be some big inflated $200 million turd bomb, you know. It's like a whirlwind. I'm sure he's a nice guy, but I'm sure you get caught up in that, and it's like you're just basically just 10 guys telling you where to show up and say this and wear this and we got this great director. Oh, yeah, stand here. Okay, bye. Oh, movie's done. All right, now go to Letterman, tell him this, make a joke about this, and that's it. That you're it's just once you get into that big show, once you get into the big show, the big time, that you are just that commodity. You know, the same way you move a piece of paper on your desk for your job to one pile and then fill out a piece of paper. That's what he is. He's just that piece of paper. You're moving from one thing to another and then typing in the thing into the computer and we saved it and blah, blah, blah. That's all it is. Just a little piece of information. That's all he is.
Yeah, there's an incredible machine behind him that's and it doesn't really, I mean, the Disney Channel, I think, is a good example or a good template. I mean, whoever figured this out was a genius. I mean, they created these stars, these tween stars, and they're wholly manufactured, sort of like the bubblegum pop groups of the 60s and 70s, completely manufactured with no intent other than to just sell a product, like Hannah Montana. Before that was the other girl, Lizzie McGuire. I mean, you know, the shelf life is only a few years, and they own this thing, Justin Bieber, whatever. But they're perfect at it. I mean, sort of the Menudo thing. It's like once they get to be 15, they get kicked out and replaced by somebody who looks just like them, sounds just like them, and has all the same characteristics, basically, because the audience has already changed, because the 6-year-olds have become 8 or 9, and they're not watching anymore. So there's a new crop of 6-year-olds, and you can sell them the same product with a different face, different name.
Absolutely, but you know what? That it's not whoever came up with that at Disney. I mean, that's been going on since day one. Since somebody figured out how to do that, you know? I mean, was Sinatra invented? Yeah, you know, no, I mean, the Mickey Mouse Club. I mean, what how far back do you want to go?
The amount of control that Disney has, I think, is something that is unique to them, or something that they invented. there's no margin of error. And I'd love to get a hold of one of these kids' contracts, see what exactly is in there about. I mean, they're so careful about the public persona and what they're allowed to do and if they're allowed to date and all of that. And the Jonas Brothers is another great example. And, you know, I love pop music. I love bubblegum rock. I don't think the Jonas Brothers are significantly worse than the DeFranco family. It's all crap, but it's stuff that I find it fun, you know, whatever. But the Jonas Brothers were just created out of a laboratory. And they were so careful about
in a boardroom, yeah, in a boardroom
of their virgins and their nice boys, and they would never drink or swear or smoke or anything like that.
And those are
fired, you know, and they're smoking.
Well, that's when he, you know, that's why when that guy, those guys are 35 or 30, you're going to, you know, they're going to wind up, you're going to find them in a car with a needle in their arm and a hooker or something. You know, it just, it, you know, look at, you know, look at the amount of what happens to these people dose and die. You know, you can't go to the bathroom without somebody looking in your window. You can't, you know, you can't do anything. You can't make a mistake. You know, look at Whitney Houston. You know, she can't make a mistake. Can't make a mistake. She made a mistake. She ruined her life with drugs. So what? That's, you know, that that's her journey, you know? Daily. Grilled daily about it. You just can't, you can't screw up. You can't be human.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Disney's been doing it for forever. I mean, back in, you know, the earlier Disney stars, Tommy Kirk is a good example.
That, right.
He was like the biggest Disney star. And he was gay, and he was, you know, that was completely covered up, you know. And there was some famous story about him, like, getting caught at a party or something, at a gay orgy or something, and and the damage control that they had to put on for this guy. I mean, it would be a scandal today, but it, can you imagine in 1964 or 5 or whatever? It wouldn't have been. I mean, the guy would have blown his brains out. You know,
yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't actually.
Right.
But yeah, and so they were doing it. They were doing it then, but I think they've perfected it now. I think they've got a complete.
They probably just hire somebody to walk around with you everywhere. You know, they got cameras on you. They probably got secret implants in your head. They, you know, GPS you wherever you go. It's like, oh, he's in the gay part of town. Somebody go out there. Send the black car out there to get him. You know, and then the guys with the fedoras and the suits, the MIB come out and grab you into the back of the Cadillac, and you go for a ride, and then you're fine, and then you're back on the set, and everything's fine. Now they couldn't get Lohan though; she got away. Disney.
I don't know what the story with her was. Maybe she got too old. Maybe her Disney-ness. Was finished, and so they just discarded her. And we're seeing that with Miley Cyrus now too. I mean, I don't pay that close attention, but you know, every now and then there's some story, some scandalous photo of her smoking a cigarette, or
we're looking at a big cake,
right? Looking at a peanut cake that was her.
Penis
yeah,
cake.
You know, she's definitely off the leash now. I wonder if that's her way of getting out of her contract, or if her contract is up, or.
Well, I don't. I mean, you don't hear anything about.
Yeah, I've got a feeling they wouldn't let that kind of stuff happen if she was really a Disney person still.
No, and you know what? I think her and her family—they made their money, and you know, it's time for her to grow up and move on, maybe to something else. You know, if she has that potential and talent.
Yeah. Well, hope she held on to her money.
Well, I'm sure she did. I mean, how much of it? Could she have had control over, you know? I mean, I think her father's a successful businessman and entertainer, and I'm sure they'll be okay. I mean, I think that's probably that will save her, you know? That will save her, is that she has that strong family connection and probably a good amount of control. I mean, and the opposite is Lohan, who has a equally effed up drug addict, drunk father, you know? Who's tried to get help, you know, and he has his own problems.
Yeah, her mom's a mess too, so.
But here's the thing. Okay, we talk about control. So it wouldn't surprise you. Let's get back to topic. Todd's falling asleep. China, you wouldn't surprise you if China and America are in bed together now to kind of brighten and cheer up the image of China in America. It wouldn't surprise you, Mr. Ree.
No.
Okay. So therefore, it wouldn't surprise you if Jeremy Lin was a plant as part of this whole media entertainment initiative by the Chinese and American whoever's to reshape our thoughts about China. Now, simultaneously, what's happening? Oh, we're bringing jobs back to America. Do you see this that's happening? Oh, we get our first look inside the iPad factory in China. Do you see what's happening here? It's all part of a bigger picture. Something is, you know, as we collapse economically, so they say, here comes this this opening of this country that's very much being talked about like America had been talked about for years and years and years, about this land of opportunity, and there's so much money there and we want a piece of that, and Hollywood wants to tap into the billions of dollars there in entertainment and et cetera, et cetera. It's almost like we're being set up for a shift in thought. And I think movies and television and entertainment will be at the forefront of that. I don't think the average person really cares, to be honest with you.
No, the average person wants to pay their rent and watch TV and not be bothered.
That brings up the next point. And those things keep going up in price. And your salary keeps staying at the same amount or even less or going away altogether. But yet, all these things that you have to worry about every day keep going up. Is that connected, Mr. Ree?
Good question. I mean,
what's it cost to go see a movie? What's it cost to go to a movie these days? You work in the movie industry. I won't tell anybody what you do or where to do it, but you are, all three of us have some hand in the entertainment business.
In the business, yeah. Well, I mean, in Manhattan, it's $11 is the cheapest.
$11 is the cheapest in Manhattan. That's probably a national average, right?
Oh, I don't know. Todd, what?
It's about the same here, yeah.
It's about $11, okay. Yeah, these.
Of course,
these,
I could go to L.A. and I could go see Silver Bullet with half the cast members there and the director probably for $8.
Well, that's different. That's second tier, you know, retro.
That's awesomeness. That's what that is.
Revival house stuff. It's probably a non-profit theater or something. And that's great, of course. That needs to happen. But I'm saying, you know, Hollywood. If I'm going to go see a Hollywood movie, now I assume if it's in 3D or they have, you know, the actor comes out of the screen and slaps you in the face, whatever the gimmicks they have now, that's going to cost you more. Is that correct, Mr. Reed?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I took my, well, maybe 2 years ago, I took my my kids to a 3D movie. This was when I was not working at a, I have a job that allows me free access to movie theaters now, but this is when I did not, so I was actually paying.
He cleans the carpets for theaters, by the way, guys. That's John. Free
exactly.
access to any theater. He's an exterminator. Free access to any theater. Guys,
what,
you know,
show business.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I took my two kids and I paid for my ticket and one of my kids' tickets, and it was $30.
And that was before food and drink.
Oh, just for a ticket, just for one ticket, just $30, just for two tickets to a movie.
And so then, add on food.
My dad was still alive, and I told him that. My God,
that's like my uncle used to say. I'm going to quit smoking when the cigarettes go up to $1 a pack. When I was a kid, he used to always say that, you know, and it seemed like such a big number, like, oh, yeah, that's crazy, you know, $1 a pack, who would do that? Now they're $13 a pack in New York City. If you're a smoker, come to New York and spend $13 and change on one pack of cigarettes.
Which is why, you know, box office totals are completely meaningless, because, you know, it's, tell me how many tickets were sold. That's all I want to know. How many people went to see the movie? That's the number they should be telling you, not the box office total. Because,
well, can't you do that math and figure it out?
Well, you'd have to know what ticket prices were at different places, because maybe 11's the average, but
these theaters probably all, you know, kind of like DVDs have a suggested retail price. I'm sure there's, you know, I don't know. There's some kind of, you know, thing going on, collaboration going on between these theaters.
Yeah, but I mean, just, you know, it's all completely meaningless. It's just studios one-upping each other. I mean, you know, you read that such and such was the
all right.
first was the number one non-Memorial Day Wednesday.
Oh, they've got all kinds of tricks now. Yeah, they've got all kinds of tricks. Okay, so if a movie makes $1 million based on this ticket price, that means 90,000 people have gone to see the movie.
Okay.
So if a movie has a $5 million opening weekend, you know, say about 500,000 people went to see it. Loosely. So, yeah, it doesn't sound as good. You know, hey, 100,000 people came out. Well, how many people are there in the country or the world? You know, like, well, who cares? The language we speak here is money. So you have to say it in dollars. And I'm sure that's even inflated. I'm sure they have some scam where they work out, like, you know, well, you know, you have to include the popcorn too or something in the price. Who knows, man? But anyway, listen, we're getting way off topic here. We're supposed to get some reviews out of you tonight, aren't we?
Well, you know, we can even stay on topic.
We can stay on topic because I think this is a cool topic. I'm sure we're going to get lots of mail about this. And if you want to send us mail and talk about this, and we'll keep talking about this kind of stuff, movieshateyou@gmail.com. And please stop sending the pics I'm talking about. Don't send those pictures anymore. You know who you are, okay? Initials CD, okay? Don't send those pictures anymore. All right, so... we can talk about, so you guys both agree with me now that I am on to a conspiracy here that has Hollywood perhaps in the driver's seat of a Chinese-American conspiracy collaboration to reshape how we think about one of the cruelest governments in the world, perhaps of all time. And I don't say that lightly. So food for thought, everyone, okay? Put pause on Texas Chainsaw Massacre or whatever you're masturbating to right now and think about that. Think about what's happening to you and who's fighting for your brain. So, how about some movie reviews, huh?
Well, you know what? I can actually stay on topic and give you a movie review.
Ah, that's real radio. That's the beauty of radio. No editing there. Go ahead.
Check this out. Okay. Speaking of conspiracies, now yeah. I'm a conspiracy buff to some extent. I mean, I'm to some extent, not every certainly conspiracy, but you've undoubtedly heard the theory, if you will, that Elvis Presley did not die. In fact, is still alive, living with us.
Yeah, isn't he?
Yeah, of course.
Isn't he?
Well,
I mean that. That's one of those conspiracies that's so ingrained in our collective subconscious that I think if you polled people, they would say, "Oh yeah, oh he's not alive." Like people would think he's alive. That's how far it's gone.
I think that's true, you know. And I don't know who actually started this stuff. If it was the Weekly World News or whatever. I know I was really into the Gail Brewer Giorgio, Is Elvis Alive? I think it was probably the late 80s,
mm-hmm.
which they advertised on television. There was like an infomercial for it. The idea was that she had stumbled upon the secret that Elvis had faked his own death and he was still alive. And somehow she got a phone call from him and she recorded it.
Yes.
So she sold a book and a cassette tape that was shrink-wrapped to the book of the entire phone call. Now, it was a lousy Elvis impersonator. Okay, and, you know, everybody's heard a million Elvis impersonators, and this guy wasn't any better than any of them. And he was saying basically stuff that we already knew, so there was no revelation or anything. But it was still pretty interesting, and it was just enough vagueness to it that you could kind of go, well, maybe, I don't know. I mean, I kind of don't believe it, but there's something to it. And there were a couple of TV specials at the same time, hosted by Bill Bixby.
Yes, which, I remember those.
How the hell they got Bill Bixby to all the...
Well, he was big. He was big. He was big then.
That's
like,
right.
He was a TV star. Because he was a TV star.
How did they get him involved in this type of thing? I mean, he apparently had been friends with Elvis.
I was going to say, he knew Elvis very well. He was friends with him.
So I'm really surprised that he got involved with this, but it was that sort of lent... an air of authority to it, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyway, cut to now, and of course the TV specials were inconclusive. Mm. But you know, there were a few little weird clues that were kind of like, oh, you know, well, why is his name misspelled on the gravestone? His middle name is misspelled. Oh, well, is that because he's superstitious and wouldn't want his real name to be on a gravestone that he wasn't in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever. It was kind of fun. Anyway, there's a new video.
Okay.
Called Elvis Found Alive.
Elvis Found Alive.
Joel Gilbert.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes,
directed,
I know.
But Gilbert. Okay. Now this is the same guy, if I'm not mistaken, that put out a DVD that blew the lid off of the Paul is Dead hoax.
Yes.
Or actually, I should say that it confirmed the Paul is Dead hoax. The Paul McCartney is Dead hoax.
The mysterious George Harrison tape.
That's what it was. Yes.
Yeah.
That George had come clean after all this time and told the story that, yes, Paul did die, yes, there was an imposter, you caught us. Now, what was wrong with that is that the guy they hired to do the recording didn't really sound like George. I mean,
wait a minute. You say the guy they hired to do the recording, you've already made your decision, obviously. The guy they hire, you know, it's like you said with the Bill Bixby, not the Bill Bixby, the his Elvis Alive book, that, well, the guy they hired was clearly an impersonator. But,
well,
would,
you know,
that would imply you're an expert on these audio type things.
I think it might have been Dick Van Dyke, actually.
Okay.
Well, Van Sculpt, nah, very, very bad.
Dick Van Dyke doing George Harrison.
Well then, Governor Mary Poppins. that's about how authentic the actor was. But and you know, and he could have solved that by just saying, "This is a recreation. This is a reenactment of the tape."
Okay.
Like
okay.
He didn't do that. So the tape that we're listening to is supposed to be really George Harrison. And
okay.
Once you realize it's not, it blows the whole story.
Okay.
So the same problem goes with this one.
They should have said we because of legal reasons. This is what I would have done if I produced it. Because of legal reasons, we can't play the actual George Harrison tape. So we have somebody reading a transcript of the actual tapes that we received. Now, see, now that would create a little more mystery, wouldn't it? You'd be like, oh.
Exactly. The more you can keep it in the shadows, the better you are, as we know with
yeah.
with whatever. Keep it in the shadows. And this one, you know, this one, it starts out promising. It starts out with the guy, and it's all obviously staged, but, you know, we've seen enough reality TV to know it's
mm-hmm.
all staged anyway. So this guy, Joel Gilbert, it starts with him and his staff sending a Freedom of Information Act for files on Elvis Presley.
Okay.
A box arrives in the mail. They open the box, and all these papers have major redactions on them, but the ink is still wet on the redactions. So he's, quick, let's wipe all this ink off before it dries, and we'll see what they try to keep from us. So they do that. And then it turns out all this stuff... There's a link to John Burroughs, which apparently was Elvis's pseudonym that he used when he would check into hotels and such when he didn't want to be known. So there was a something about DEA agent or FBI agent John Burroughs, and it's from 1987. And he's like, well, but didn't he die in 77? And there was an address. So he goes out to this house, and then it just gets completely absurd because he goes to this house, and there's a car parked in the driveway. It's like a 60s sports car, and he looks into the window, and there's the back seat's covered with Elvis Presley 8-track tapes. There's a couple of guns. There's Nixon bumper stickers on the car.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he goes way too far to sell this idea.
Okay,
why? You know, if it really was Elvis, would he have his own 8-track tapes all over the car? Wouldn't he? at least be trying to keep a low profile, probably.
Okay, I mean, okay, so...
The only thing that would have been worse is if it said, I am Elvis on the front of his house or mailbox or something. So he knocks on the door and says, hey, I found this. And, of course, Elvis spills his guts and says, okay, I'll give you an interview. I didn't
say, yeah, of course, of course. Everyone's been trying very finally. Just yeah. Like, yeah, whatever. Why the hell not?
Drive, but, yeah. Well, I knew that, I knew that this day would come that somebody would figure out my whereabouts, but I didn't know it would be so soon, so I guess I'll just fill my gut.
I didn't know they'd be so handsome, so all right, you guys. Now I'm going to cut you off, but we're running out of time here. Our producer producer's riding on me. We got one review in. So wait,
don't get me wrong. It's insane. It could be so much better if the guy had just taken it a little more seriously and just, you know, sell the sizzle, not the steak, right?
Well, isn't that part of it? Is kind of like, hey, you know, we're having a laugh here. We're winking at you when we're making it. Okay. Well, I felt that a little bit. I thought the I haven't seen this one, but the Paul McCartney documentary was so well done. I mean, it's like something you would see on Discovery Channel or something. As far as production quality, it wasn't guys with a camcorder, you know, making a joke thing. It was really well edited. It had a lot of animation, and I'm sure this one is similar.
Yeah, definitely.
Regardless, I'm sure it's going to do well. There's still interest in Elvis. I'm sure it's a bestseller, and you can get it at bmovie.com, our sponsor here at Movies Hate You. Mr. Ree, you'll be back next time with some more reviews, including the next in the 1313 series.
Absolutely. Right? Cougar Good. Cult.
Cougar Cult. Look that one up. And while you're doing it, look it up at bmovie.com, where you can get Cougar Cult and Elvis Cult and Mr. Ree Cult, and you get all kinds of stuff. You can get milk and eggs and groceries and tampons and all kinds of stuff. So get over to b-movie.com. That is the sponsor of us. We are Movies Hate You, and we do hate you, and you hate us, and movies hate us all. Todd, thank you very much for
thank
producing
you guys.
The show. And thanks for not hijacking the show this week and with Batman talk. And Mr. Ree, see you soon. Thank you. Good night, all, and watch out for those Chinese.